Good morning, everyone. It's great to see such a huge crowd, and hopefully I'll keep you engaged for the next half an hour. But if I happen to lose you at some point, look up our website, go to the Western Australian Economic Summary, which was released back in December, and that'll give you a pretty fulsome analysis of the Western Australian economy, plus some feature articles which may be of interest, particularly one on productivity in the mining industry. So I recommend that to you, just in case we get lost over the next 20 minutes or so. Probably one of the key issues that I have to convince you about this morning is that what I said last time when I stood up here last year, we actually got some of that right. So we might start there. And this slide is a direct lift from last year's presentation, and these were my sort of takeaway tips. And the first was enjoy it while it lasts. It doesn't get much better than this. Well, got that one wrong, because it did get a lot better. Capacity is being expanded, and I think we're seeing the capacity of our infrastructure keep pace with what is stellar performance of the West Australian economy. The third, watch out for inflation in wages, prices and assets being housing and so on. I think it's fair to say we got that one right. The consequence in terms of interest rates we also got right with a couple of increases last year. And the fourth one, plan for it not to last, and focus on 3 years out and beyond. I think to a large extent, while it has lasted, those messages remain valid. So let's go to current conditions then. Economic activity in Western Australia is absolutely astounding. There's no two ways about it. We've got the lowest unemployment rate since the mid-70s, and real domestic demand, sort of the domestic level of activity, grew by 7% in the year to September last year, which we've done that before. The WA economy has done that before, but it hasn't done it 3 years in a row, 4 years in a row. So the sustained level of activity, as you can see there from the blue bars in particular on that chart, is just absolutely incredible. Where's it coming from? A lot of that is coming from retail turnover. And as you can see, since December 2002, we've powered ahead quite strongly in terms of the confidence that people have and their willingness to part with a dollar. Housing. I think we're all aware of the incredible boom in Western Australia's housing market. And you can see that the divergence there with the from about December 2001 with the national market, with WA in the blue bars just powering ahead. Contributors to that, again, the general confidence among consumers and population growth and the labour market conditions as well. Business investment also gone through the roof. We thought back in sort of the end of 2003 that things were going pretty strong, and then we plateaued a little bit, and then through 2006 business investment just went berserk. Partly in response to our external trade conditions, and the strong demand for Western Australia's key mineral and energy resource products has been fueling that business investment, with a global commodities price boom inspiring that commitment of resource. This is a chart with a vast array of numbers. I think the only thing you can take away from a chart like that is if you look at the 2005-06 column, some of the huge figures for growth in there. So business investment, 37%, dwelling investment, 8%, public investment, 23.5%. One thing we did get wrong was net exports. We actually thought exports were going to go up by 3%, and they fell by 3% in net terms. We checked back through our records, and that wasn't a typo. Someone left off the minus sign. We did expect exports to grow, but there was a slower flow through of that investment into production, plus also some seasonal factors with cyclone activity and so on. So we should see that turn around in the coming year. This, of course, has contributed to what are extremely healthy state finances. The state finances have really taken a quantum leap over the last couple of years to be in the realm where surpluses of $1 billion plus are reasonable to expect given the economy's performance. Revenues. Last financial year, I think the economy overall grew by around 14%. Revenues grew by 14%. You get a strong economy, you get strong revenues. It's as simple as that. As a result, the best way to compare the relative taxing burden of the state is to compare it to the overall level of economic activity. If you compare it to per capita, you're going to get a distorted read. Comparing to the level of economic activity is the measure that I would encourage you to use when you're making your assessments about the relative taxing effort of jurisdictions. Of course, with the strong economy comes expectations for service delivery. Because things are so good, everyone expects that services are delivered quickly, effectively, efficiently. As a result, government has expanded in response. And of course, the debt position is a long way off government's self-imposed constraint of 47%. There's plenty of capacity there financially, but as many of you would be experiencing, the capacity in terms of people is probably the bigger constraint. So let's turn to the top five issues then for 2007. Finding more labour. This is one of my teams in Treasury and Finance a couple of years ago. A good bunch of people to work with and very committed and keen to be a part of Treasury and Finance. Some of them, in the current environment, have turned their back on Treasury and Finance and gone to work elsewhere because it's so bloody competitive out there. And we're all struggling with this, people, our best people being poached by others and competing with each other, bidding up price. And that labour shortage is going to be a key constraint on the WA economy again through 2007. But that's not the end of the world. People will move to their most productive and efficient use because that's where they will get greatest reward. And that's part of the ongoing evolution and development of any economy. As you can see here, job ads are through the roof. Similarly, businesses reporting scarcity of labour are reporting that scarcity at an historically high level. 73% of respondents to the CCI Bankwest survey showing scarcity of labour. And as a result, vacancies have gone up substantially and have stayed up. So what do you do in that sort of market? Well, you pay more. And particularly, mining and construction has seen massive growth in wages over the last 12 months or so. Employment growth, again, a very strong story, but not as pronounced as the story in wages and not as pronounced as you'd expect from the vacancy story, mainly because of the lack of people and the shortage and the fact that our unemployment rates are down to such low levels, 3.6%. The benefit of having sustained unemployment rates that low, of course, is long-term unemployment, which is a huge issue in terms of the nation's productivity. It's a huge issue socially as well. The strength of the WA economy over the last 2 years, as you can see in the sort of declining wedge of the orange bars there, has seen a massive decline in long-term unemployment. The figures at the moment, under 13 weeks unemployed is 2.3 percentage points of that 3.6 total unemployment rate. 13 weeks to 1 year is 0.8 percentage points. And over 1 year unemployed, 0.5 percentage points, which is a fantastic result. So where are we going to get labour from? One of the confusions, I think, around the debate over the last 12 months or so has been the source of WA's population growth and where we may or may not be able to source additional labour force. Sounds like that was a big night. The key issue from this chart, and the kind of principle that I wanted for you to take away, is basically that interstate migration is marginal in terms of contribution to WA's population growth. And by far and away, the biggest component is net overseas migration, which highlights that net overseas migration is crucially important to the ongoing growth of the WA economy. In fact, net overseas migration, if we look at the past 12 months, totaled 21,500. That's relative to a natural increase in the domestic population of just over 15,000. So net overseas migration is by far and away the biggest source of our population growth. And fortunately, we're getting our fair share of net overseas migration, and our population growth is outpacing that of the nation as a whole quite dramatically. We're at around 2% at the moment. Australia as a whole is running at around 1.3%. So that's the number five issue for 2007. Number four, housing. As you can see from this chart, and as I think has been widely reported, house prices in WA have gone berserk. There's a bit of a series break in around September 03, and the red line further to the right there, which is about December quarter, September quarter 05, is the series break that was caused by me. I was building a house about 18 months ago, and we decided that rather than miss out on, you know, the favourable conditions in the housing market and sort of sell when just as things were turning down, we'd put our house on the market early. So we did that. And of course, we managed to time it just right to get the end of the down cycle in price and just before things went berserk and up by 50%. So much so that on Saturday, for some reason, I looked in the paper in the real estate section to check our old area, just to see what it was doing. Sure enough, first ad, our old house, for $250,000 more than what we sold it for 18 months ago. And we sold ours for not much more than about $400,000. So just highlights that the market is crazy, and that has to settle down. The key question is, does it settle down smoothly, or does it settle down with a bit of pain? The part of the story there is what is coming out of the new housing market and the capacity that's coming on stream, and therefore relieving some of that pressure in the established market. And there's signs both in dwelling unit commencements and residential building approvals that we've probably seen the greatest heat in the market over the last 12 months. And from here on, there's a cooling in store. Again, the key question is, how frosty will it get? Our forecasts are based on a cooling in the volume of transactions rather than price so much. So we expect price to hold, but for there to be much lower turnover. Again, owner-occupied housing commitments showing a definite decline in trend there. Housing affordability, a key part of that declining trend, and the fact that people's incomes are being stretched quite substantially. One of the key debates in the past sort of 6 months or so has been around first home owner activity and the impact that this affordability is having on first home owners. We dug out our stats on first home owner grant applications, and this is the history back to July 2000 when they were first introduced. And it shows that we're back to the levels of activity that we saw between mid-2002 and mid-2004, which is probably a reasonably healthy sort of level of activity. The key issue of debate over coming months, I think, through 2007, will be one of not so much first home buyers, but renters. And we've seen massive investment activity, which is the increase in the sort of orangey shaded section there. Massive investment activity over the last 2 years, and that will translate into a desire for a return on that investment, and it already is. So what we would expect to see is fairly substantial pressure on rents from an economic and social perspective for those that are renting and are on fixed income. That's a significant issue with which to be dealt. On the flip side, on the asset side of households, the All Ords has done okay, and that's translated into household wealth. And of course, wealth has been boosted by those homeowners who are benefiting from the increase in value of their asset, albeit maybe not being able to realise that. But I'm sure John will talk more on equity market issues coming up. Issue number three, and I'll just move through these fairly quickly because I think they're fairly well understood in public debate at the moment. First one is water. I recently had some leave and had some stuff delivered for my once a year maintenance of the lawn to make up all the harm I'd done to it over the previous year. So I got a trailer load of stuff, about a ton of dirt, pretty average dirt. And it cost me about $100. I thought that was a pretty rare, you know, fair deal. It's a fairly big sort of purchase. This stuff comes to your tap, delivered, clean, purified. For one tonne, you pay $1. People wonder why we've got a water shortage. One of the key issues going into the future and in the water debate will be pricing. So supply, identifying new sources is one issue, pricing is another, and government has taken a number of decisions around reforms in pricing. There are also the nationally agreed reform agenda, structural reforms. Probably the one you'll read and hear most about over the coming year will be reducing regulatory burden. It's very quick to say that, and it's very attractive because it kind of makes sense and it sounds good. Much harder to achieve. So the coming year will be about the action plans to achieve regulatory reform. Human capital is much harder to understand, but basically that suite of reforms is all about achieving expansion in the productive capacity of the labour force, which when you go back to the previous slides about labour shortage, is crucially important to enabling the WA economy particularly, and the national economy to grow further. Access, another major issue on the sort of front pages in WA at the moment. This is a shot from BHP's facility at Port Hedland, and you can see the rail cars down the bottom there. Now, the big question is, are those rail cars part of a production process or just part of a transport system? The courts have considered that issue, and there's further consideration in the courts, which will take some time. So basically, that course of action means a very valuable piece of infrastructure has a question mark over it in terms of common user access. So we're doing quite a bit of work to try and develop an access regime that meets the expectations of all parties without adversely impacting upon any of the parties involved. And that will continue to be a major issue and will continue to be one that is watched closely in terms of the precedent it sets for other major pieces of private infrastructure. This is my dog Brutus. I guess I should probably say a bit more than just that. Brutus is a wonderful dog, but he has very high expectations. And what he expects from me, often the various expectations are mutually exclusive. He loves to run. I can take him for a run for about an hour, which is about my limit, and he's pretty much stuffed after that as well. And then 5 minutes later, he'll follow me around with his lead in his mouth, ready to go for another run because he forgot about the run he just had and he's ready to go again because he's just insatiable. Either that or he'll start kicking at his food bowl because he wants something to eat. Of course, having just run for an hour, that's probably not a good idea either. So that event's kind of mutually exclusive. Or he'll want to come inside, and we run down by the river, and often he'll go in and get quite stinky, and as you can see, he's a bit of a slobbery sort of dog. So he'll want to come inside, and he'll want to do all those things constantly, every day, all day. And you just can't do it. You cannot deliver. And as much as I try, I just can't make him happy. Which is the story of tax reform. Because people want to consume, they want to eat the services and the goods that government provides, and the demand is insatiable. We have one of the best health systems in the world. We have a huge reform agenda in our health system, but there will continue to be examples of where people demand better service. In addition, one tax cut is pocketed pretty quickly, and then people move on straight to the next one. So the ability to meet people's expectations in terms of tax reform is very difficult, particularly when that's taken in isolation from service delivery. I wanted to just quickly highlight, and this graph's a bit sort of, there's a few logical leaps of faith involved, but basically this, the red line is the monthly salaries that we pay through the health system to provide health services to West Australians. And the dark line is the conveyance duty receipts over the past couple of years. As you can see, for as much as people criticise stamp duty, it's a major part of how we fund the health system. And the health system is only a third of the total public sector, so that kind of puts in context where the money goes. So when you're thinking about tax reform, when you're seeing the debate on tax reform, consider those issues, consider the trade-off between different forms of tax reform and tax measures and who that's going to benefit, and consider where the money goes, because we can't have world's best police, education, health and so on without generating the revenue. Number two, we're almost to the top issue, international conditions, and I think these are fairly well understood, but basically world growth in output, pretty healthy outlook according to the IMF over the coming 12 months. More importantly for Western Australia, the world growth in trade is at expectation is around 7.6%. So that will continue to make a huge contribution to Western Australia's export volumes. What happens in price is a different story, and we'll get to that. How long the world continues to tolerate the twin deficits issue in the States, I don't know. And I think that we're seeing some evidence of that in terms of a slight slowing in expectations for US growth. But if there was a crunch in financial markets around that imbalance in the US, and the rest of the world's preparedness to fund that imbalance, I wouldn't be surprised. I said the same thing last year. Nothing's really changed, and I think I'll stick to that story until it actually does happen one day. China, for what these numbers are worth, and the numbers are pretty dodgy, but basically the outlook there is for continued strong development of the Chinese economy. And consistent with the past 10 years or so, Japan, unfortunately, will continue to struggle. The interesting thing is inflation in Japan is probably the highest it's been for quite some time. But the number one issue for 2007, commodity prices. In essence, the West Australian economy has benefited from a boom in commodity prices. And you can see the almost exponential growth there since June 2001. Flicking through, and I'll just do this very quickly because you'll pick up the trend fairly obviously. Nickel, outstanding performance since early 2006. Iron ore, massive increases and sustained increases one after the other. And I think we've had another round of increases and contract determinations just in the last few weeks. Alumina did very well through early 2004, 2003, dropped back a bit in 2006, but showing strength once again. Gold, similar story. Slight divergence, crude oil prices come back, which is quite an encouraging sign from an inflationary perspective. And adding all of those price trends up, the value of WA's mineral production has gone incredibly strongly over the past 12 months or so. The volumes, however, haven't been as strong. And as I mentioned before, that 3% decline in net exports, we've seen substantial investment in, particularly in the mining sector, as evidenced by the orange bars there, but that hasn't shown up in volumes of exports just yet. 2007 is when we'd expect to see some of that starting to flow through, some of those major investment projects starting to export and increase growth there. That's probably going to be sustained for some time, given the amount of construction work that's in the pipeline, particularly the heavy industry work, as you can see there. That's a quarterly chart. The last 3 years, the rapid increase in the amount of work that's yet to be done, the amount of work on the books. And that will continue to move through to completion over the next 2 years or so and boost the export volumes. Of course, having such a stellar performance and increasing our capacity and trade into the world market at such a phenomenal rate has an impact. So expect to see some softening in commodity price over that horizon. Hopefully you've forgotten what horizon I was just talking about. Next 2 years or so, because we are such a major player in some of the world supply of those commodities. When we expand production, it has an impact. And of course, all of our competitors are madly trying to expand production as well, in response to the healthy price conditions. So those are the top five issues from my perspective in 2007, and I'll leave you with a couple of policy issues for 2007 before we get to this. Climate change, obviously one, and a particularly difficult one in the context of wanting to make an impact, but at the same time do so in an equitable and sustainable way. And as long as, for example, Kyoto Protocol has a bunch of our competitors sitting outside of the constraints that come with that protocol, then for us to sign up to that would be disastrous. That's my own personal view. It's not a view of government, just for clarification. But those sorts of issues are really the policy challenge over the next 12 months or so. We've already spoken about tax reform. We've spoken about water, the current water initiatives. Unfortunately, probably a little focused on the eastern seaboard, particularly Murray-Darling issues. But we are making substantial progress within Western Australia at the moment. And if we go to the Harvey Irrigation Project, that's realising probably the biggest volume of water from a reform process that the nation has seen. Health, I've mentioned briefly health reform, and it's probably not very well understood the massive change that is happening within our health system at the moment. And it's a huge challenge, but it's an incredibly rewarding challenge. And it's also a crucial challenge, because if we don't reform the health system and ensure it continues to deliver efficient and effective service, then we won't be able to keep up with financing it in the years to come. Coming up this year is the next Australian healthcare agreement with the Commonwealth. And out of that, one of the key policy issues is, at the moment, the states run the hospital system, which is the middle of the system. The Commonwealth runs the front end, which is the GPs, primary care, and the Commonwealth runs the back end, which is aged care. The pressures coming from those two extremes have the states in a pincer movement, and it is very difficult to get effective interfaces between all three components of the system. And that's going to have to be a major reform initiative as part of the upcoming healthcare agreement, because you can't get the centre bit working right if the interface with the other two bits isn't working. And lastly, as a result of the quality of services that the state government provides, these are my two young blokes, Jet and Weston. The taller one is Jet. Weston's the short rat bag one. These guys have got a great future, and I'm extremely proud to stand before you as your servant, a public servant, and know that I've contributed in some way to that very favourable outlook that these people have. They'll be fed well, they'll be educated well, their teeth will be good, and so on. Contrast it with this bloke. He's about the same age as Weston. He lives in the central desert lands, the Ngarrindjeri lands. He doesn't have that same bright future. In fact, he's probably already behind the eight ball in terms of his learning ability, because his hearing's probably not so good because of his hygiene circumstance. That's if he ever, you know, really gets to go to school on a sustained basis. He's probably going to have some sort of interaction with the justice system through his life, given that our Aboriginal population at 3% of our total accounts for 40% of our prison population. This is a major issue, and while I'm proud to be a public servant, I'm not proud about this circumstance. And as the Community for the Economic Development of Australia, CEDA, the challenge I put to you in 2007 is to do something about this. There was an article in the West Australian, probably about a month ago, which ran through some of the key sort of outcomes, comparators to for the Indigenous population and normal population. So I'll just run through them very quickly and then we'll throw to questions, sorry. Diabetes, four times more likely for Aboriginals. Cancer, mortality is 62% higher. Heart, Aboriginals are 1.5 times more likely to die after a major coronary event. Obesity, almost one-third are obese compared to 20% of non-Aboriginals. Kidney disease, 10 times more likely. Lung cancer, 1.5 times more likely. Much higher prevalence of smoking. Alcohol, less in terms of prevalence, but worse in terms of impact. Teeth. 1 in 6 Aboriginals aged over 15 has never been to a dentist. Add all of that up and basically the life expectancy of Aboriginals at birth is 66 years on average compared to 81 years for non-Aboriginals. So I appeal to you, the Community for Economic Development of Australia, to do something about this because it's quite a shameful outcome. And not only that, it's not something that government can solve itself. It's something that government has a role in, business has a role in, but the community more generally has a role in terms of the way it thinks, the way it considers these issues, and whether or not it is prepared to accept this circumstance. So on that note, I'll end. Oh, on takeaway tips, sorry. Gotcha. Easing in commodity prices and share prices, and John will hopefully comment on that. Easing levels of housing activities as interest rate increases flow through. Adjustment in and around the US. Again, I'll stick to that story till it happens. And don't take abnormal risks because things won't stay like this forever. CEDA needs you to evaluate the resistance to reform and understand the underpinnings of reforms and to contribute to the debate around reforms, particularly Indigenous disadvantage. And CEDA probably would also advise you not to ask me for advice on real estate transactions.